And welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and chavruta Yordana husband, our daf of the day, Masechet Bava Metzia, daf kaf tet, page 29. So the part I want to talk about is really a dispute between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva that is largely found on Amud Aleph. The very beginning of it is on the previous daf, so we're going to read that from the very bottom of 28. Maya hei bedamim, the discussion here is on that section from the Mishnah, which we talked about yesterday, about if you had found an animal that is not helpful in your house or in your farm or whatever, and so therefore, instead of having to expend money and everything to upkeep the animal, you can sell it. And then the question is, what do you do with the sale of the money? What do you do with the money from the sale? And Rabbi Tarfon had said, and here we're going to see this in the text itself, Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Yishtamesh. Rabbi Tarfon said you could use that money, and then, of course, there's a risk, because if the money is lost, meaning not just used, but also gone, and then you would have to then pay restitution for that loss. Whereas Rabbi Akiva had said he can't use that money, tuck it aside, and if it's lost, he's not liable for it in the event of having to pay back the original owner. So the Gemara says, I can lo plige el kishnish tamesh behen. So the Gemara says, at that point, right, this whole dispute between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva, they're only talking about a case where the person who found the animal and sold the animal is then going to use the money. But avalo nishtamesh behen imavdo patur, imavdu patur. If the person did not use the money to begin with, meaning he sells the animal, and then even if he's allowed to, he didn't use it, then both of them would agree that the person who found the animal, etc., the finder here, is exempt from having to pay restitution. Meaning Rabbi Tarfon does not think that the finder who sold the animal would be liable for that money no matter what happened to it. Only if he sold it, I mean, only if he used it and then got that benefit. Lema tahavi to yufta de Rav Yosef. So the Gemara wants to dig down and understand this dispute between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva and looks at this then, perhaps it's a refutation of Rav Yosef. What did Rav Yosef say? De itamar shomer aveda. In general, when you're talking about somebody who is lost, is protecting a lost item, right? The kind of guardian of a lost item. Rabba Omer Kishomer Chinam, Rav Yosef Amar Kishomer Sachar. Meaning, if you're safeguarding a lost item, and meaning the owner has not, you have no interaction with the owner except for the fact that you have found the owner's original item, the original owner's item. So then Rabba says that puts you in a status like a shomer chinam. Shomer chinam meaning an unpaid guardian, where somebody says, "Watch my stuff," right? You're not hired. You're not borrowing it. You're just there as a shomer chinam, a free guardian. Meaning, here, watch my stuff, and the liability for that person is minimal. Rav Yosef Amar kishomer sachar, but Rav Yosef says that it's like somebody who's paid for that job. And the liability for somebody who's paid for the job is much, much more significant, right? Because if you're paid to be the watcher and then something happens to the thing that you're watching, well, of course that's on your head, right? You didn't just say, okay, sure, no problem, I'll watch your stuff. You're getting paid for it. So the question then is, you know, how far does that go? And how does this connect then? Or how is that going to answer or explain the dispute between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva? So the Gemara explains, everybody agrees that in the case of a theft or a loss, meaning where the guardian lost the item, then everybody agrees that the shomer, that the guardian is who had been, you know, enjoined to watch this thing, is liable to pay restitution, right? Compensation. Ki plige ba'onasin de shoel. Where's the dispute? The real dispute, the crux of the dispute, is when something happens beyond the guardian's control of something that they've borrowed, meaning the borrower borrows whatever item, and then circumstances beyond his control destroy that item. Is he then obligated to compensate for it or to replace it? Or is he not, because the item, because the thing that happened to it were beyond his control anyway? Rabbi Tarfon Savar, Sharule Rabbana Lishtemush Begavaihu, Vahavale Shoel Alaihu. So Rabbi Tarfon's opinion in that case about the guardian, who's not a regular guardian, but a borrower, Right? So the sages say he could use the money, and therefore he's a borrower with regard to that money, and he would have to compensate the owner if something happened beyond his control. Because he borrowed it. It's fully his responsibility. Rabbi Kiva Savar, Lo Sharu Le Rabbanan Lishtamushi Begavayu. Rabbi Kiva thinks that the sages didn't permit him to use that money at all to begin with. Hilkach lo haveshoal alayu. And therefore, he's not considered like a borrower with regard to him. So perhaps if we can say that the status of the guy who found the item can be treated like the borrower, then we understand, like, that's why Rabbi Tarfon thinks that he's in a hock, he's liable to have to pay the original owner for the item in the event that he used that money and now has this borrower status or something akin to a borrower status with regard to the funds. Ihachi, the Gemara says, if that's the case, so then the question is, what do I even need that statement? The Rabbi Akiva says, Lefichach, Damar Rabbi Akiva Lamali. Because we know, right, Rabbi Akiva already had said that he cannot use the money. Therefore, it's lost. He doesn't have to pay. What do we need that lefichach, that therefore he doesn't have to pay? If you're saying that the disagreeing about the case of theft or loss, well, hainu the katani Rabbi Akiva omer lo yishtamesh behen lefichach im avdu eino chayav b'achriutan. Well, then, if that's the case, then we understand that the whole idea is the Mishnah is teaching that Rabbi Kiva says he cannot use the money, and therefore, if it's lost, he's not liable to begin with. He doesn't have to pay. So then, if you take that approach, then it seems to be that you're thinking to suggest, right? The Mishnah or the interpretation is thinking to suggest that really the finder in this case is not like a shoel, like a borrower, but like a hired watcher. A hired guardian, and that would line up with Rabbi Yosef, namely that in the case of Geneva and Aveda, if the item was stolen or lost, then the person who found it would actually have to pay. It's no longer, he doesn't have that cushion of not having to pay. Therefore, we would think that's therefore we can infer that that's why Rabbi Akiva teaches. Lefichach, therefore, Shomer Sachar lo have, he's not a paid guardian, lo machayev b'geneva, and he would not be obligated to pay restitution in the case of theft and loss. Meaning, the question of how, to which of the four classic Shomrim we compare this case of the finder of an animal that he can then sell will change the requirements, based on, again, based on which kind of shomer. So, and that helps us understand where Rabbi Akiva is coming from to say that he doesn't have to pay. Ella iamar b'geneva v'aveda dekulei alma lo pligei d'chayv. But if you think that there was no dispute about the case of theft or lost anyway for a case of a shomer guardian who was hired, he pligei bonasin to shoel, then we're only disputing the case of the borrower. My lefichach, the Rabbi Akiva. Well, then what's this lefichach? There, what's the therefore? What's the thing that you can then infer from? Hachami ba'ele lemitna. So the Gemara says, well, this is what the Mishnah should have taught. Rabbi Akiva omer lo yishtamesh behen. That the person who sold the animal cannot use the funds. Behen lav shoel have. And because he can't use the funds, he's not a borrower. He's not akin to a borrower. And he's not obligated to pay back those funds if anything happened to the money itself. And then if the Mishnah had said all that, then I wouldn't need the therefore. Because there's no therefore. His position would be stated outright, and you don't need to infer. You don't need to work at understanding Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara explains, Mishum lefichach de Rabbi Tarfon. So really, it's to make a parallel formulation in the Mishnah, right? What's the issue? Rabbi Tarfon himself has a therefore, meaning therefore, when the money is lost, he would have to pay restitution. That's what Rabbi Tarfon says. So therefore, we're going to have a therefore for Rabbi Akiva as well. Lefichach to Rabbi Tarfon laminli. The Gemara says, okay, so fine. So you've answered why we've got a lefichach for Rabbi Akiva, but why do we have a lefichach for Rabbi Tarfon? Hachi ka'amar kivan d'sharu le'rabanan l'shtemushi b'gavayhu kaman d'ishtemashu b'gavayhu dami v'chayav b'achriyutan. Because we would say, Rabbi Tarfon himself would say, therefore the money is lost. And
why would he have to pay restitution?
Because, you know, it's exactly this case, that the sages permitted him to use that money, and therefore he's like somebody who used the money, and therefore he's liable to pay the restitution, which puts him back in that case of that level of responsibility, which is where we get a therefore for me, Tarfon, right? Therefore, in the event that he would have lost the money, he would have to pay restitution. Therefore, if he had used the money, he would have to pay restitution also, right? Like at some point he has to pay back. He has to provide the funds for the original owner. The Gemara goes on from here to address, you know, a deeper question in Rabbi Yosef and how that's gonna like kind of have impact on the dispute between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva. What happens if you look at it as a matter of damages? I'm gonna stop here. We're coming very close to the Mishnah. Yordan, I know you're gonna take the Mishnah. But the extenuating factors, I guess, that come into play here get even more complicated to talk about, but it's worth a quick read through to see how they try to line it up. At the end, the conclusion is, the Rav says, that Shmuel says, the halacha, here I'll read it, Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, halacha k'Rabbi Tarfon. Meaning, at the end of the day, the psak is like Rabbi Tarfon, even though I think that the effort here has been made to understand, you know, to work at Rabbi Akiva's opinion even more so. I think that at the end of the day, they like this comparison, you know, to the Shomrim, to the Shoel in particular.
Which is so the Gemara. Like, it's not about the bottom line of the halacha. It's more about working through everybody's opinion.
Oh, for sure.
Okay, I'm going to move on to the Mishnah, which continues its discussion of what are you allowed to do with objects that you find till you're waiting for the owner to claim them.
Matzah Sfarim. So if somebody finds scrolls, Kore Bahen Echad L'Shoshim, he reads them once every 30 days, right? So we have continuing to talk about what do you do when you find lost objects to sort of care for them till you find the owner. And so the idea here is that you should read them once every 30 days in order to keep them ventilated and make sure that nothing happens to them. V'im eino yodea likrot. And let's say he doesn't know how to read. And I think it's interesting because the Mishnah here is assuming there was some level of illiteracy in the population. Golilan, right? So you should at least roll them, roll them and unroll them in order to ventilate them. Aval lo yilmod bahem batchila v'lo yikra acher imo. But you shouldn't study passages in them for the first time. In other words, you shouldn't like really look at the scroll. When you study something, you sort of keep the page open or the section of the scroll open that you're studying. And so that could cause some damage to the scroll. So you shouldn't learn something new for the first time from the scroll. And you also shouldn't read it with another person, because what you worry about is that, you know, somebody may pull the scroll closer to them and therefore you could rip it. Mishnah continues and goes on. Matzah ksut. Let's say you find a garment. Right, so you should shake it out once every 30 days and spread it out for its sake. Again, just ways to keep the clothing ventilated and keep it in good condition. But you can't use it as a decoration sort of for your own honor, right? You can't use it if it's something that looks pretty. Kli kesef ukli nechoshet.
Somebody finds silver or copper vessels. He can use them for their own sake, right, to make sure that they don't tarnish or rust, but not to erode them. Gold or glass vessels, right, which don't really get ruined. He basically can't touch them until the owner actually comes and claims them. If he finds a sack or a basket, or anything that is in his typical manner to take. In other words, something that he wouldn't normally use because it's something poor people would use, or it's a little bit like beneath his dignity, he shouldn't take them because to actually return them. So it's a very interesting last clause there, that in other words, there are some things, even though before we talked about that the object needs to be worth, right? We said it had to be worth a pruta in order to return it or to be required to return it. Here we're basically saying that if it's something that's, you know, like, let's say, I think today would be like a plastic bag, you know, you wouldn't like return a plastic bag. That's not something that you would hold on to. So the Gemara from here starts with a scenario from Shmuel. Amar Shmuel, hamotzitz filin bashuk, sham demehem umanichim la'altar. So if you find tefillin in the marketplace, right, and let's say you need tefillin, right, you can assess your value and put the money on the side for an owner. Now, people probably did not everyone probably owned tefillin at this time. So the point is you can use them and then sort of set money aside for the owner. Meitiv Ravina. Ravina objects to this, right, where it says, Matzah Tzfarim Koreh Behen Echad L'Shoshim Yom. And he quotes our Mishnah that if you find a scroll, you ventilate it every 30 days. And if you don't know how to read, right? In other words, by ventilating it, by reading it, then you just roll it. It says to roll it, right? But it doesn't say to take their value and put the money aside. Amar Bai says, Tefillin Bei Bar Chavu Mishkach Shichi Sfarim Lo Shichi. Right? So Bai says the difference is that there were always tefillin available at the house of Bar Chuva, right? Where they made them in large quantities. But scrolls are not available. In other words, the point is that scrolls are different because they're very, very hard to find. Whereas like tefillin, it's something that you could find. They are replaceable. So that's why you could put money away and sort of be like, I bought them. And then the person could just come and get tefillin later. Again, when I first read this, to me, it read as sort of like not everybody had tefillin. So that's why you would use somebody else's tefillin. But the point is that tefillin, according to Abaye, seem to be replaceable, whereas the scroll isn't.
Then we get to a braisa that's going to talk about the status of a Sefer Torah. And it's not a Sefer Torah that gets lost, because that would obviously be an unusual situation. But it's more about if you are responsible for a Sefer Torah, you borrow a Sefer Torah, or somebody asks you to watch a Sefer Torah, what's your responsibility towards that Sefer Torah? How do you care for that Sefer Torah the way that it should be cared for?
Tanu Rabbanan Ashol Sefer Torah Mechaveiro. Okay, if somebody borrows a Torah scroll from another, Hareze Lo Yishalenu La'acher, you can't lend it to somebody else. Potzcho B'Korebo, right? He opens it and he reads it. Ubevach Lo Yimod B'Tzchila, but you can't study from it, similar to what we had before. V'lo Yikra Acherimo, and somebody else can't read it with him. Okay, all similar to our Mishnah. And again, this is a case of borrowing. Somebody who leaves a Sefer Torah with somebody. So in other words, first we're talking about cases here about it being watched. So you unroll it every 12 months. Right? And he can, you know, he can open it and read for it. But if he opens it for himself, that's not allowed. In other words, you're opening it. You have to have the idea that you're taking care of it. Sumkos Omer, right? Sumkos says, "Bechodesh Shloshim Yon, Biyashan, Bechadash Shloshim Yon, Biyashan, Shnei Masar Chodesh." With a new Torah scroll, you roll it every 30 days because the ink may not be fully dry. You need to ventilate it more. Whereas an old Torah scroll, you do it every 12 months. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, "Echad ve'echad, Echad zev ve'echad zed, Shnei Masar Chodesh." Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, in the case of both this new Torah scroll and that of the old Torah scroll, you roll it every 12 months. Okay. So the Gemara from here is going to want to know what is special about a Torah scroll itself. Why is it that they have this particular discussion about it? And, you know, I just read the rest of it. I'm going to stop here. But it's a very interesting discussion specifically about a Torah scroll. Now, the Bryson does not specifically mention about a lost Torah scroll, but I think it's more talking about when you there are certain items, right, that when you use them, there's an expectation that you have to take care of them, or even if you're watching them. And I think it shows how precious the Torah scroll was, right? That's why there's a separate set of halachot about what to do with it should you find it in your care.
Yes, I find it such a departure, right? Like, wait, what were we talking about again? Now we're talking about tefillin in such a way that I never really thought about them before, right? That you could go to like the tefillin warehouse and get yourself a pair or use a pair if you needed it. And then also the Torah scroll, the idea that a Torah scroll gets lost, Holocaust aside, because I understand, obviously, Jewish history has seen all kinds of, really exceptional cases, but it's hard to imagine that that's what they're talking about. So even if you talk about a smaller personal Torah scroll, like where is it getting lost? I find, it's just a departure. Like what were we talking about? What are we talking about now? And thank you, Gemara, for bringing in, more different other cases, but it's still a little, I don't know, jarring, startling, that, and it seems so dramatically different.
Well, that's our DAF discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this DAF on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.